Talking today with Colin Woodall from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's D.C. office. Colin, of course, this week, as the cattle industry meets, we've got Congress doing some work up in our nation's capital, at least the Senate side is, this week. And you know, as we think about some of the priorities that that you see unfolding over the next few months, what's really out there that's going to be most important to the cattle business?
Well, the overarching theme that we're seeing more from the House, but also from the Senate, is the whole idea of reinvigorating congressional oversight of what's going on in these executive departments like EPA, USDA, FDA. And I think that's where we get excited, because that's not a function of Congress that we have seen for quite some time, going back many, many years, both under Republican and Democratic control. And we've been meeting with several members, especially on the U.S. House Representative side, to talk about a lot of these issues we have problems with. Dust ruling from EPA, a lot of these things that we know are going to impact the cattle industry. And they said, hey, let's use this Congressional Review Act and let's really make sure that Congress has a say in what's going on. If we can make that happen here over the next couple of months, we think that would be a great step in really trying to slow down this slew of bad regulations that we see on the horizon.
I know that on this whole idea of regulation, there's several things that are very important. We'll go to the EPA in a moment. Let's start with our friends at USDA and our good friends over at GPSA. We've got, obviously, a major rule that still is hanging out there after the comment period, the marketing rule.
We do. This proposed rule on competition is still a big concern of ours. The good thing is we met with Secretary Vilsack. I think Secretary Vilsack was really surprised at the sheer volume of comments that they received on this. Over 60,000 comments were submitted, a huge number. So he has made several commitments. One, they are in the process of reviewing the comments right now. They are making a list of all the concerns that are being brought up, and the Secretary committed to having a legal review of those concerns and also a policy review of those concerns. The third thing, and the one that we're probably most excited about, is he said that they would do a cost-benefit analysis of this rule, something we had asked for and had several members in both the House and Senate ask for. So we think that all three of those are a good sign. It shows that they're taking the concerns serious. At the same time, it's also going to buy us some time. It's going to take a while to get through that sheer volume of comments. It's going to take a while to do an economic analysis. And while they're doing that, I think we'll continue to work with these new members of Congress and just let them understand our concerns with this proposed rule.
I know in talking with Congressman Lucas just the last few days, he continues to basically contend and says he's going to really press the case as chairman. They've gone beyond congressional intent.
Yeah, I think you will. And we know that they've gone beyond congressional intent. There were five provisions in the Farm Bill that NCBA and several of the other producer groups were a part of formulating. If we could keep it at that, we would have been fine. Our goal right now is to bring it back to those five pieces. If we can do that, make the changes in the rule that just take it back to those original five functions as approved by Congress, I think everybody would be a whole lot happier. And at the same time, USDA will still have a rule that they can roll out that will address some of the issues specifically in the poultry and in some cases the pork industry.
Let's talk about EPA. Maybe the marquee issue is cap and trade. We're seeing some pushback right now, a group of senators in just the last day or so of unveiling some ideas, some legislation that they want to basically tell EPA no.
Yeah, that was a great bill. Senator Barrasso from Wyoming was the lead sponsor on that, had several co-sponsors, and that's exactly what it is. It's telling EPA that you can look at these gases, but you cannot regulate them based on a climate change type standard. It also goes further in saying that a lot of the climate change greenhouse gas rules that they already have in place, including reporting requirements from feedlots, would go away. So we're very excited that we're seeing that, especially from the Senate, you know, because the Senate is still controlled by the Democrats right now, and they had made a push to try to get cap and trade done. So to see that kind of activity, I think, goes a long way in showing that maybe there's a little bit more reality in this Congress and a little bit more common sense, and we're going to continue to help them. We have endorsed and supported that bill, and we're going to do everything we can to try to get more sponsors on it.
Realistically, how do we keep EPA from continuing to move forward?
The realistic part is just through the congressional oversight of everything they're doing. You know, the Congressional Review Act provides for 60 days from the time a regulation is proposed for them to review it and potentially vote it down. We have to make sure that they take every opportunity to do that because it exposes the issue. It allows the general public to become aware of this. And really, I think most people will see just how foolish it is. The dust example is a great situation where we have ambient air in the western states, just your regular air, that's going to be out of compliance with some of these new rules and regs that they're talking about. Pretty much overnight, you're going to put America's food and fiber production system in violation. I think once people start to see that and understand it, a lot of this pushback really will delay EPA, and to some extent, it's about running out the clock on this administration.
Interesting lawsuit that was reported just a few days ago against the EPA by some activist groups regarding endangered species as they relate to ag chemicals. That has tremendous impact on American agriculture, farmers and ranchers, in how everything really has been put together over a bunch of years. How do we deal with some of these I guess wackos, if you want to call them that?
Yeah, that's a great example. Another great example is the petition that was filed by HSUS to have the cattle industry regulated under greenhouse gas rules. It's showing all of these groups are finding every way they possibly can to come after modern agriculture. I think the task ahead of all of us as trade associations is to do that very thing you posed. Figure out how we push back and expose a lot of the shenanigans. We don't have the answer yet. It's something that we're doing a lot of talking about. It's something where we've pooled our resources and put together the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance to try to talk about just educating the general public on exactly who we are and what we do. I think that will go a long way in letting people understand that we're not the bad guys here, that modern agriculture, modern beef production, modern grain production is something that we should be proud of because it's given us the opportunities to not only feed ourselves, to have a good, high-quality, nutritious, cheap food supply, but also feed the world, and that we really can't go about feeding everybody with 40 acres and a mule. It just doesn't work. And unfortunately, a lot of these activist groups, the ones that file these lawsuits, that file these petitions, just don't understand what it means to really feed an ever-growing United States and especially an ever-growing worldwide population.
Related area, and this obviously the dietetic side of it isn't necessarily your expertise, but the policy side and the ramifications of something like the dietary guidelines that were released yesterday by HHS and USDA, how important is it that the beef industry, in effect, push back and make sure that lean meats are included, are part of the conversation in this type of initiative? Because it seems like that almost sets policy on a lot of these programs we have.
Well, you're right. It really does kind of set policy and at least puts people in a mindset. So it's extremely important that NCBA really work with the not only the decision makers on Capitol Hill, but the decision makers in the scientific community to get them to understand exactly what the nutrition value of lean beef is and how the science out there does not say we shouldn't be consuming it. When you look at the dietary guidelines yesterday, it wasn't everything that we would have loved it to been, but they didn't say stop eating meat, and that's something we always have to be concerned about. You know, some of the initial documents on this dietary guideline process said to transition to a more plant-based diet, including plant-based proteins. Of course, that gave us an extremely big shock and scare because that really takes away lean beef from being in the center of the plate. So what we're pleased overall with where the dietary guidelines came out because it still maintains moderate levels of lean beef consumption. But you're exactly right, making sure that we continue that education process, not only with the decision makers in these departments and on Capitol Hill, but once again with the general public to let them know that all things in moderation, but we have these lean cuts that are nutrient dense and are a great way to get all the vitamins and minerals that you need with a minimum amount of calories.
Last area, Colin, that has to do with tax policy. Quite a victory into December for the industry. You came up with probably more than you maybe could have hoped for. And as far as, you know, if you put your wish list, written it down a few months earlier, but yet only 2 years. How do we generate off of this victory a way to get more than that?
Right, and that is the question right now. The good thing is that we're building off of this current base of $5 million per person, $10 million per couple, and the reduced tax rate, everything that we got in December, versus where we were when we were negotiating this just a couple of months ago. We were really pushing up against the December 31st deadline of making changes to the death tax, and that would have led us to only a $1 million exemption and 55% tax rate. Because of that, a lot of people thought that we couldn't get as good a deal as we did, but we were able to maintain everything that we wanted, just short of full repeal. But we get to use that as the stepping stone for this next set of negotiations in 2012. So we're in a much stronger position than we were here in December. And also we have a much more tax relief friendly Congress to deal with, especially on the House of Representatives side. So a lot of people in our coalition are now talking about bringing up full repeal again. I still think that might be a little too ambitious, but being able to maintain what we have, I think, is a great way to protect a vast majority of agriculture. And we just really think that the overall dynamic is going to allow us to do that. But that means that we need to continue to work on educating all these new members of Congress on what we were able to accomplish in December with our negotiations and what that actually means for providing relief for consumers or for producers. And we've got 85 new members of the House of Representatives that were not a part of that. They really don't know much about the death tax. And so our education component is really the focus when it comes to tax policy here for 2011.
Colin Woodall with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Washington, D.C. office, reporting from Denver and the 2011 Cattle Industry Convention. Ron Hayes here on the OklahomaFarmReport.com.